Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, thank you. Final can be an opportunity or a threat. So I hope I can bring this together. I thank Alisa for her presentation because I think it leads quite nicely into what I'm going to say today. Roughly speaking, I'm going to take you on a tour of Vitae, where we are now, what we're doing. Some of you I know are very familiar with that. I pose the question, what are we preparing researchers for? Never mind research. What are the influences, I hesitate to say driver, on researcher development at the moment? A look at researchers' capabilities. Paul Manners earlier mentioned the researcher development framework. Let's have a rethink about that around this. And then I think a general overview of what I see are the kind of key issues for institutions at this time. Just to revisit Vitae's vision and aims, we're funded by research councils and will be funded also by the UK funding bodies, HEFC and the others, going forward. And to stress that our mission and our goals remain the same. I would see them as influence and policy, and we've heard a lot about that today. Enhance higher education provision. And we will continue to work through a network of hubs with a reach into, it's about 140 institutions in the UK, and through our advisory groups, we work there. And I think one of the key strengths in terms of the UK's reputation for research and development stems from that collaboration that has come through in the last 5 years through the Vitae networks. We've also looked in terms of research excellence and that pursuit of, in a way, at kind of UK level, mirroring what can happen within institutions by breaking down or reflecting on the silos and the roles and responsibilities amongst the academic and the professional services communities. I suppose that comes from my own passion coming out there because my own background is in that area and working together collaboratively. So we, just to give you a highlight of the kind of things we've looked at and things that you might want to look at back at your own institutions, we recently had a joint event with ARMA. I know someone's here is a member of that, Association of Research Managers and Administrators, looking at how we as researcher developers and research managers could work together in pursuit of research excellence and researcher excellence along with the academic community. And we got a set of actions out of that, which I think will help us to move that one forward. Similarly, we had in Manchester an event about the REF where we brought together researchers, REF managers and researcher developers to analyse and look at what opportunity there are of leveraging support and expertise from different communities within the university. And I'll address that in the further on. And with Paul there, the National Coordinating Centre for Public Engagement, we've got a long history of working together and looking at public engagement and impact as well. We also had, and I'm going to address it in terms of employer engagement. Our remit is within research or development, and we looked out, and again, there's someone in the audience who helped us understand this last December, in looking at how we could leverage in employer engagement expertise from across the universities to support researcher developers in their jobs. And again, there's lots of interesting outcomes about that. So not only are we beginning to build those networks, as Alisa said, across the universities as we've had, but also inside universities, across the professional groups as well. The third bullet point we have is empower researchers. And I think we would say that that's what it's all about. In the end of the day, empowering researchers to do good research and aspire to excellence is what we're trying to achieve. And inevitably, we evidence the impact in various many ways, formally and informally. Just a kind of huge list, and I apologise to people at the back because I was at the back and it's quite difficult to see, but anyway. But I've listed out some of the resources that we've created kind of for use around the UK because they map out what I see as being the researcher journey. We start with effective researcher. We have a long history of grad schools that we provided from about 1990s for research councils, moving on to broadening horizons, careers in academia, leadership in action, and so on all the way through. it was interesting talking about digital networks, and welcome to those who are digitally with us today. We looked at digital research, and there's a tremendous amount of interest in there. Social enterprise, lots of other different types of entrepreneurship as well. And then we move on to support, for example, Research Staff Association in terms of that empowerment and researcher voice. So, OK, what do researchers do? I think this is the final session, and I want to end it on a really upbeat note, and we really need to celebrate and acknowledge the achievements of our researchers, whether it be in the academic community, whether it be in other careers and other sections. And just those top headlines that I've got there, let's ignore the bottom bit about where they go and all the rest of it, because they go to lots of places, but not every place. And that's a question, I think, for our economy. And again, you can see that on the website. But just look at the use of those skills, the generic skills. 90% of them said that they were using them. And this is across all sectors, 3 years after they've left doctoral education. Innovation, some or all of the time. And we need to think more about how our researchers are innately innovative because they are researchers, rather than something that they learn that's drawing out the best skills. They felt they had a positive impact in employment, whatever that was. The doctorate was valued, yes, whether it was an important requirement in, say, a research-intensive company or otherwise. They used the research, and they've undertaken research using their skills. And they go, as I say, not everywhere. And we have to remember that at the end of doctoral graduation, about 50% go on to other careers. So while we're reflecting on REF and research excellence, we need to be thinking about how that added value from those researchers who will move on from us, how will we get that back? And that has to come back in some shape and form in impact, in terms of their connections, not their impact. Okay. I thought I would just kind of quickly go through what I saw were the changes that are affecting researcher development. We have the changes in undergraduate funding, and I won't dwell on that. I think it leads us to think about many things about widening participation in postgraduate study. I think it leads us to say what was going to happen in terms of the balance across research groups in terms of UK researchers. I would see research, what I call their research talent development strategies. There are real challenges sitting there. How do we sustain excellent doctoral researcher provision? How do we create a stronger emphasis on research staff development, and how do we develop research leaders who will take us forward beyond REF and into other things? I've put there infrastructure, because the funding into researcher development has changed. We've heard about the end of the Roberts funding. We've been through, a period of churn and turmoil in who's doing what in universities, and each university has had quite an individual response to this. But I'm pleased to say that our Vitae International Conference just at the beginning of this month, there was a real sense of stability. Change has happened, people have different roles, maybe the research development's been done in different places in the institution, but things are moving forward, and the upbeat message has got to be that it is being sustained by various different routes. So we have that. There's I'll come back to again, the researcher surveys, Press, Cross and Pearls, doctoral researchers, research staff, principal investigators, research leaders, what we're doing with that. The QAA quality code has come in, that's worth looking at. And we have the RCUK assurance, where you have to report on your actions around the Concordat, which might just be a little one of those missed things. That's who's owning that within your institution right now? Quite important. The research councils have got a strong impact on what we do. I think the concentration in doctoral centres of excellence is very interesting in lots of different dimensions. We had an event on that earlier this year, and I won't dwell on its impact there. I'll just move on to say it's interesting to see what happens there. Then I come to the research excellence framework at the end. I finished up there with a sense of public accountability, because I think across the board, and it's been iterated many times today, that we have to find good reasons why we should be continuing to develop researchers and evidence that. At this slide is going to be a reference to the event that we had, and these were the kind of things that came out. Now, those of you who are involved in REF will know the first two bullet points right away. It's 50%, it's evidence of vitality and sustainability, and it includes many things. But I would like to just draw on the fact that it actually asks for case studies around early career researchers and postgraduate researchers, equality and diversity issues, professional development, and as Lisa said, developing the Concordat. From the conference that we had and that meeting of minds between REF managers and researcher developers, there was also thoughts around using the results of the Press Cross and Pearl surveys within units of assessment and really leveraging success that many of you have had around the HR Excellence Award Concordat and implementing excellence in QA code of practice. For me, I think the challenges are, when we looked at the REF, what did we think about researcher development? Well, for many of our cohort, the early stage researchers, not the early career researchers as defined in REF, because that includes the academic community, but generally speaking, people who are coming through the system, that the most important impact was in, I shouldn't use the word impact there, in the research environment. And I think the challenge is to translate institutional strategy and excellence into unique propositions from units of assessment. And I think the infrastructure, the opportunity is there. It's that translation that's important. And in achieving that, I believe that it will take leverage of expertise from around the different functions within the university. I know some of you are working on that at the moment in that particular way. I think it's also important to keep our heads up and just remember that we need to start planning with that talent pipeline for the future leaders of impact beyond REF, and also the future leaders of researchers as well as research. And that's where I'll take this from here. We've heard mention of the Roberts Agenda, the end of the funding. I've mentioned the Quality Code, the Concordat, and the European Charter and Code, which are all quality drivers and demonstrations and opportunities for universities to demonstrate their excellence. 61 universities in the UK have achieved the HR Excellence in Research Award. This is something that can be used in making grant applications. It can be used in your REF feedback, and it's very, very exciting. Others are on the way to do that. Those institutions have published strategies, and many of you will be greater experts than me in this. But the next challenge is to demonstrate action on the back of those strategies in 2 to 4 years' time. That'll be ongoing. There are 61 there. I counted it on the train coming down, just let me know. But if I have missed anybody, please let me know. I want to get to this slide. I just want to check how I'm doing for time.
You've got another 10 minutes or so.
10 minutes. Oh, gosh. Fine, because I want to pause on this one, because to me, this is like a kind of turning point slide for us to consider in how we go forward. And I do apologise to those at the back or those who can't see this, but all I want you to do is to look at the red dots, the blue squares, and the green triangles, if you can. And I'll talk you through it. Now, this was a survey, 2,500 principal investigators, research leaders. And it was their kind of response to how confident they were in particular activities and how important those were for the development of research leaders, in other words, for the talent pipeline that's coming through. So the red ones are research-related activities. And if you can see, they sit very much high confidence, as you would expect, from research leaders, and high importance. So those are things like securing research funding, developing a research area, preparing research proposals, and so on. In the green ones, that's more about outward-facing activities, knowledge of research strategies and priorities, demonstrating impact, external collaborations, and they're shifted down. So there's less confidence and a certain less importance in terms of research leaders' views. But the one that's really, I think, the theme for me today in terms of supporting researchers is the middle one, which is HR management. And when we think back to the 7 principles of the Concordat to support the careers of researchers, we see that sitting there. Motivating individuals, building and managing research groups, managing performance, recruitment and selection, terms and conditions of employment for research staff, providing career development advice, induction, probation, appraisal, continuing professional development, all sit in that area. And they sit, shall we say, slightly behind the red ones. Okay? And I think there's a real feeling. And the question is, who does what in this area? And I'll come back to the presentation this morning about the transition of researchers in and out of communities. So I think that affects there. So if you can just hold that thought of that question mark there, and we'll move on. I want in that context just to raise, following the Wilson Review, obviously, and a lot of relevance in terms of, for example, BBSRC looking at professional placements and so on, what we're meaning here. So we did a little bit of study because following a seminar we had with employers, it was perfectly obvious that it was almost like a project triangle, you know, cost, quality, and benefit. And there was a huge debate about whose time was it, who was going to pay for it, whose quality was it? Was it the business quality? Was it the university quality? Was it the researcher's quality of experience? How was it working out? I just want to flag that up to you because I think that's an ongoing debate we need to consider in the benefits of that kind of activity for researchers in the detail of how that's going to play out. Certainly from our own case studies, and again, they're on the website, so I won't dwell on them, but there are clear benefits for all three actors within that partnership that we are worth, I think, looking at and developing. I'm now going to move on and consider researchers as individuals, whereas where I think the researcher development framework lies. I've said at the top of that slide that the researcher development framework facilitates strategic approach, and it also empowers an individual report approach to researcher development. It's worth remembering where it came from and why there's so much international interest in it, actually, was that it was based on interviews of successful researchers. And it was their experiences, 1,000 descriptors, that was analysed into what became the researcher development framework. And that is quite celebrated internationally. They think that's a very kind of rigorous approach to that. It gives us a common framework, gives us a common starting point. Now, what is very interesting to see is what happens with that common starting point. Once you've got the baseline, it allows researchers to kind of take control of their own development because they can see it. It allows institutions to build their researcher development provision in a particularly structured way to look at the well-rounded researcher. And for those kind of early adopters, what I'm beginning to see happen is that the institutions are being able to use the researcher development framework to articulate what a researcher from their institution should be, can be. What are our aspirations for our, you know, from the University of Alison Mitchell? What is my aspiration for my researchers in alignment with my mission? And that's beginning to move there as well. Paul gave a very nice introduction to it, so I'm not going to dwell on it at all, and I know many of you are familiar with it. I just want to draw your attention to the quadrant D, engagement, influence and impact, and to the top little section of descriptors. So I want to read them out to you because I know you won't be seeing them. Collegiality, team working, people management, supervision, mentoring, influence and leadership, collaboration, equality and diversity. You'll find impact and public engagement and so on in there as well. But that's the quadrant. And the power of that researcher development framework comes from its origins in those interviews with successful researchers. Because behind the kind of this circle, which has almost become iconic, we tend to think that's the researcher development framework. In fact, the researcher development framework that sits behind that is a series of up to 5 phases of development within each of those descriptors. And the top phases, probably from about phase 3 to 4 to 5, certainly that area, reflect in a kind of affirming and, I think, inspirational way what accomplished researchers who are research leaders, principal investigators or supervisors, what they perceive as being important in those roles as those senior people. And I think what's interesting from the presentation this morning about the mobility within that group is is the challenge to universities to sustain that leadership and management around research or development within the academic community whilst academics are moving in and out of it. Okay? I think there's a whole discussion and debate about that. We've been very pleased with the uptake of the research and development framework, and it was reviewed, and there are case studies in the House of Lords review, and there's a couple of quotes there that show that it's really being embedded in many, many institutions in the UK, and we're very pleased about that. And that little picture, because I promised myself I put a picture on every slide, and that's to celebrate it's an institutional use of it, and it's actually Manchester, so you don't need to read the small print. And I could have included many, many others that space wouldn't permit. At our conference, we launched to the sector an upgraded version of the Research and Development Framework Planner, which is, if you like, the tool that researchers can use to map their own development. What's interesting about it is, and I think the opportunity for that strategic and individual approach, is that strategically institutions can put and map their own resources to the framework, and then researchers can access the framework, analyse their skills, evidence their achievements, make decisions about what they want to do next, and there sit the institutional resources to help them on their way. So it becomes a kind of circle like that. In the spirit of collaborative development that we have, we're running that as a pilot up to Christmas. So if anybody's interested, just give me a shout and I'm sure we can do something. So I just want to conclude now with what I thought supporting the next generation of researchers. Leadership from supervisors and principal investigators, which may be how people are in terms of being accomplished in terms of the research or development framework, and also what they do in that quadrant that I identified for you in leadership management and people management. I think certainly, pardon me, that professional development for researchers needs to be owned by the individual. That's the feedback we constantly get. That's that empowering of researchers that I spoke about earlier. That we should begin to see development of researchers as a continuum. Now, we've just worked with Warwick University, actually, in looking at undergraduates engaged in researchers in research and what that means for them. And we're looking at moving, for example, the planner on into other places. It's important to listen to the collective voice of researchers, and by that I mean looking at the surveys, talking to researchers, finding out what their needs are, recognising what the university mission is, trying to put the whole thing together. To take into account individual circumstances. By that, what I mean is that in terms of equality and diversity, we have new pressures on researchers now, and we need to take that into account as we go on. And there's a very empowering statement about a principal investigator and supervisor in the RDF about how they should be in terms of leading equality and diversity within their research group. I started by saying that researchers go on to many different careers. And I think on that basis, we need to make sure that within our research environments, that all career choices have equal validity and are supported. Now, it may not be that the principal investigator or the research leader is the best person to support that individual, but at least there should be systems in there to support them. And my final point, I think, is a call to arms, a call to collaboration, that I think we will achieve and sustain research excellence and that recognition internationally of excellence in research or development that UK has had by leveraging and collaborating, not just across universities, but within universities as well. I hope that's given you some thoughts.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.